On today's show, Facebook, also known as Meta, as of yesterday, October 28th, do you care about the rebranding? What are we to make of their latest event? Everybody's shaking their heads. And also,
how can AI be good for the planet, at least on emissions, and still terrible for the planet on being AI?
Some good news and some not so great news. This is a typical AI business podcast. Begins now.
Defense. The trucks.
It's another fall day in North America, and I guess across the pond in the great British Empire. I'm joined by my three usual hosts. Counting down is Max Molex, our global editor of AI Business.
Good time of the day, and yes, I am departing for Pastures New as the senior editor of Data Center Knowledge. It's a job I always wanted. It's gonna be interesting. It's gonna be probably very, very stressful. Anyway, I will catch you on the flip side in a couple of weeks, but until then, I'm still the editor and the man in charge nominally, so hello there.
And again, Max, I didn't ask.
No.
And of course, still holding the Ford AI Business, he's the dutiful reporter, Benjamin Wodecki. What's your middle name, Ben? I don't think I know.
It's John. I had the unfortunate initials of BJW. So another reason to laugh at me, listeners. Hello, welcome, thank you.
And of course, the very cheerful editor. The very cheerful editor. Editor, see, he's a step up. DCD, Data Center Database Dynamic. I wasn't even kidding there. Sebastian Moss, how are you doing?
I am excited. I'm in a good mood because, like, Max and I, we both worked together at DCD, Cordial. Then we kind of worked in separate but tangentially related fields when he's at AI Business. Now we will be mortal enemies. And all the years of dirt I have got on him and collected, all the understanding of his many weaknesses and allergies, I now know.
And it's going to pay off, yeah.
Yeah, it's going to pay off. He's going
to
die.
He's the Sean Bean to your Pierce Brosnan in GoldenEye.
Yeah,
how's that analogy? For Bong fans.
And we all know how Sean Bean ends.
See, you haven't seen the Squid Game. It's not the biggest and the most proficient guy who wins.
If you're wondering, where is this going? And why were we drinking?
We're drinking because I have 4 days to live.
No, it's because it's a Friday and we don't usually record on a Friday show. So we thought, you know, it's 6 o'clock over there. So why don't I be part of this? What am I doing? I have to drive in an hour. No, I don't. Hopefully I don't have to pull my way out of that one. So some stuff has happened. It's a typical 4 days. So something always break, you know, in the middle of the week. And in this case, I sent everybody like a late message as soon as I found out on Skype. I don't know, you guys probably know about this in the morning anyway. Meta, M-E-T-A, not talking about Meta World Peace. Apparently when people change their name, formerly known as Ron Artest, an NBA player changed his name to Meta World Peace. So when people change their name, they tend to find Meta. I don't know why. So another person has changed their company name into Meta. That is the beloved Mark Zuckerberg, the Zuck, changing the name of Facebook into Meta. So this is not, we're not, so Facebook remains the same, and underneath Meta, it's going to be Facebook, Instagram, and WhatsApp. So that little group's going to remain the same, but it's been a not so smooth sailing for a couple of weeks for Facebook. It feels like things are happening. This is calling back to the Cambridge Analytica, but this one feels a lot worse, right? So what is happening?
It's basically a case of Zuck going, hey, what's that over there? No, this is, this comes after a string of PR disaster, after PR disaster for Facebook, now known as Meta. So they've changed the holding company name. Effectively, Mark said in June that he wanted to realign the company as a metaverse-focused outlet, basically focusing on AR, VR, whatever. And he's done that, and he's posted a very lengthy keynote and video yesterday. Very fancy. I was up watching it. It was embarrassing.
By pathetic, you mean cringy.
It was cringe-inducing. It was very embarrassing.
As a preeminent tactic company on the planet, I feel like they could have made more of an effort. Mm-hmm. I feel like their 3D renders were shit. You know, like, it was very cringe-worthy in terms of, like the scripts.
Maybe that's them trying their best, actually, Max. You have to think about that, too. Maybe that's the best we can get from them.
Can do. Like,
wait, dude.
I don't expect anything else from Mark. I'm just saying, in terms of humor.
I'm just saying, you think about virtual environments, you think about something like The Mandalorian, where they created these kind of like essentially expansive virtual worlds all on green screen, right? And then you look at what Facebook did, and that looks, you know, like, I think Second Life at this point in time, pound for pound, actually looks better.
You mentioned Second Life, that was brought up a lot on Twitter. We've talked about Second Life before on previous episodes. Basically, it's just an online sim, basically, and you can spend actual money. Max is obsessed with it. I recommend checking older episodes
out. I am
out.
Obsessed with its place in history because it was a very, very important project, and it set us on the way. If there was no Second Life, they probably wouldn't be a meta. So it is important to know your heroes, and in this case, our heroes, or at least the hero, is Jaron Lanier.
Take a step back. No one has explained what the metaverse is. You know, like, what is the thing that Mark Zuckerberg nominally wants to build? And I mean, the concept of metaverse is kind of a vague term, but it's the idea of like a shared virtual universe in which you then layer everything else on top of. So it would be like, I will go to this virtual world to live this version of my life and then do work or then meet friends and then do all these other things on top of it.
So it's an all-inclusive VR
or AR, it doesn't
work
have to be
life
VR. Like, ideally
platform.
It makes more sense in a VR AI world, but like the version that Zuck is, you know, the mother Zucker is thinking about, you can also visit on your phone. Facebook are working on a Meta watch, just a smartwatch that you can visit on.
But I think there's two different concepts there. One is a layer on reality, right? Which kind of like enhances everything you do and complements it. And the other one is completely new spaces. And those are probably going to be personal, you know, like these are going to be workspaces, these are going to be play spaces, like family spaces, whatever. So just like there's slightly two different things. I think they want to do both. And I think like, but I actually think there is more money in the layer on top of reality because that means advertising. I mean, obviously.
I mean, if you watch the videos, what he's talking about is the idea that like, you know, hashtag creators can create worlds and create versions and create games, and create spaces, and then sell those. And what Facebook has long openly been sad about is that they don't control an operating system platform. So they don't have Android. They tried to make their own phones, failed.
Correct.
They don't have Apple.
Didn't work, yep.
Obviously, they don't have Windows or anything like that. So the idea is if the next platform is this kind of access to a virtual world and Facebook is the gatekeeper, then they can take a cut of all of that and control it as they have done so well with their own social network.
It makes sense for them, though, to push the VR side of this as well because they do own Oculus. Oculus is VR-focused. Everyone laughed at them when they paid an exorbitant amount of money for them, half a decade ago. And actually now this could be a way for Oculus to step up. Their VR headsets are actually really good. I'd recommend them personally. I'm not taking any money from the company, full disclosure, for things. But then all you can do is VR chat, and that's pretty crap. Like, there's nothing really tangible at the moment. And what for me personally, what they showed off yesterday, it didn't look that great. It was kind of akin to what Microsoft showed off earlier this year.
It's 100%. It's not real.
Everything we saw of the metaverse was just
recorded.
A recorded green screen experience layered on top. I think, you know, we talk a lot about Second Life, and for people that don't know, it's this like still ongoing, but it was a much bigger deal in the past, like world
90s.
Where you could 90s have a Second Life. You'd have an avatar, you'd walk around, you'd be able to interact with things, you could own a house,
date,
you could
buy clothes,
all of these
exactly
things.
Virtual but property was a big part.
I don't think that's the comparison we should be looking at. The comparison I think we should be looking at is PlayStation Home, which was a very much failed metaverse.
Microsoft Connect.
Idea where it would be
Xbox. Control and Connect. Yeah.
Well, yeah. So the idea was you'd load up your PS3, you'd go into this virtual world and you'd run around and you'd go into like a virtual cinema, you'd watch a movie, you'd go into a lobby, then meet your friends and then play a virtual play a game. And the difficulty and what didn't make sense beyond the fact that the infrastructure clearly did not exist at the time and Sony were not capable of producing an experience that didn't crash was that it doesn't make sense to have an intermediary. If I want to watch a movie on my PlayStation, I go to the movie thing and watch a movie. If I want to play a game, I go to the game thing and play the game. What Facebook is trying to say and what PlayStation Home tried to say was, no, before you do that, have this shared lobby-like experience. And I just don't understand the need for that, because if we're saying there's great VR and great AR, there's going to be some great VR and great AR games, and I want to just load those up. I don't want to load something that first has to layer through Facebook.
But they're not. There's not Meta. That many great VR. The best VR, if we're talking games, I know Max is getting extremely excited. They're not that many experiences. Half-Life Alyx is probably the best one, and we'll get there. Max, I know you're really excited. For our audience, if you PlayStation Home was like, what, 2010, right? A couple of years later, you had Kinect, Microsoft, Xbox trying to push. But it sucked, and they forced it.
I had that experience of sitting with my roommate and trying to do this.
Yeah, and it doesn't work. It's extremely responsive. That was 10 years ago. We've come a long way. But from what the Zuck truck showed us off yesterday, it looks awful. Like, I cannot. If that's the best thing that they could put on, Jesus Christ.
And it's like, they are not the first giant, very well-funded super corporation to make VR work. Lest we forget, Valve has been trying that for years, ever since the boat kind of Vive, and tried to make it work for them. And they are a company that makes 3D environments. They are, like, from their origins, a company of 3D environments. And it's just like, if we want to look at state of the art, we need to look at Steam and what Steam does. And you look at state of the art on Steam, and is it good?
Nope. If you want to talk 3D, and you want to talk gaming, Nvidia is the one that I'm looking at. Vitavid Cameo is something they demoed earlier in the summer. It looked pretty good. It's more for video conferencing, whereby if I'm sat to the left, looking outward, it can scan my face and recreate it so I'm always facing forward. That is exciting because it's tangible and useful in a business environment. But the idea that I'm going to come home from work and just go, hi guys, how's it going?
I'm going to wear this sweaty headset.
No,
now.
Like, come on, well, Zuck.
Yeah, I mean, this is the thing. You have to split it into two bets or two questions. A, is the metaverse as itself, just as a whole, is that something that's actually going to happen? And then B, if that does happen, what are the chances that Facebook are the one that are able to consume that space and become that metaverse holder?
To me, the second question answers itself. I don't think Facebook is going to, or anybody wants them to, right? At this point, at this juncture in time, in terms of the zeitgeist of what's going on. My other question is, just kind of to follow, another question that follow what you're saying, is do we want that, I guess, you know, for anything longer than 2 hours, right? Because we've all played VR games. I get dizzy. I had a good experience. I had fun. I got scared. You know, it was like, you know, it's like some jump scare involved. It was some me chopping. There was some shooting involved at my friend's place. I had fun, but it's not something I feel like I have to do more. I need to do more than half an hour at a time. So, well, is that the future we want?
I think we have to assume that many of the technical barriers will be overcome eventually. So latency will go down. The size of the device on your head will go down, and the computing power will go up. Those are just natural, as long as, you know, society doesn't collapse. That's a natural progression of technology. The question is that enough to convince people to stick a thing on their head? That's a big ask. I think we're at this weird place, and we've talked about it in previous episodes, where the tech industry is known for all this innovation, but we have been in a holding pattern on smartphones for so long. We came up with smartphones. It was great. It changed everything.
It's plateaued.
And then, they got more and more powerful. Cameras got better. And then it just plateaued, like you said. And we haven't really worked out what comes next. And the idea that something has to come next, and it has to be this next step of sticking our head into a virtual world, is not guaranteed. And I think Silicon Valley assumes it's guaranteed.
It's going to be something, but is it going to be this?
And it's this assumption that immersion is always better, when in reality, you know, our phones can play a lot of, you know, 3D worlds and videos and stuff. But at the end of the day, the number one way you want to consume stuff is often just text, really basic text. And you just look at it on your phone, maybe you want a bigger screen, you consume it text. You don't need a whole, like, virtual garden to then read some text, because at the end of the day, that's still not going to change. We're not going to change that if we want to consume something, it needs to be this 3D plateau or this huge diorama. It's absurd.
100%. Well, I think that's also what I was thinking too, because when they do the pitch, it's always like, you're going to be in the concert, right? They even do that again. They do that, another iteration of that. So no question, Texas A&M, but okay, fine. I won't get dizzy if I spend hours in there. But if I want to watch a concert, I will either one, go to the concert and try not to record a bunch of Instagram story like Ben did, because then you feel like you're not enjoying the concert. If you're doing Instagram videos, then you're not enjoying what you are, right? So that's number one.
Number two. I enjoyed that conference. concert, I'll have you know.
Conference, exactly.
It was the Wurzels. It was a West Country soccer band.
An old English band, yeah. It's a good band, man. And the other thing is, if I want to watch a basketball game, I watch it on TV. That looks better then, because I can get all the information. I don't need to pretend I'm in the audience. Either I do it in person or I watch it the proper way. And I feel like they're not, what you were saying is exactly right. Even if the technology gets leaks miles ahead in the future, why do we need that? I still don't see actually you guys other than conference calls, right? Or a minor going to like a dangerous area, fine. There's that. But I feel like this is still a very niche, you know, audience and use cases versus like everybody needs to get on this ASAP because this is the Microsoft 360 email or whatever. It's just not it.
I think the thing that our audience cares and our listeners care about is, as you say, use cases. They want to know how relevant is it going to be for what I do, and I think the business use cases is fine. Another use case that's kind of interesting that we've been covering for a bit is a company called Matterport, which are using this sort of technology in this space. Essentially, they scan a building, and you can now do it on your smartphone. So this week, they announced you could use it on Android. That's what, like like a billion devices or whatever. Android phones is one of the most popular handset users. So essentially you go into a room, you can scan it and it recreates it through an AI and ML engine called Cortex, I believe, and it basically just recreates it. I've had a look. They recreated the NASDAQ office recently because they floated, and it's really good. I think that's a sensible use case.
Exciting. For like looking NASDAQ as a office.
Except I've been to their office.
The idea behind it is there. Like as someone who wants to get on the housing ladder but will never be able to afford it, the idea of looking at houses online is amazing. For Tien, when he buys his fifth house, he could probably use it there.
But this thing, because I think what Zuckerberg is trying to do is conflate the metaverse with virtual reality. And it's like, we could have really great VR headsets in the future or AR glasses, but you still don't need this intermediary step. So it's like, if I want to play a great VR game with Max and defeat him like I'll defeat him when he's at DCK, I can just play
that game. You'll begin with the game. Right.
So the idea, what he's trying to do is replace the internet as we know it, which is a bunch of web pages that you type in Google, and then on Google you type something else in. He wants to be that intermediary layer and really own the framework and firmament.
The way Google does now, that's actually very good. Yes.
And that is terrifying. I mean, so
of course.
Moving from the technology onto like the timing, right? I think we've talked about previous episodes. Everyone knows Facebook's not going through a great time PR-wise. Obviously, you have the whistleblower, a series of articles, so many articles on how terrible they are and how many genocides they're tied to and how many mental health crises they're actively causing. You can see why they'd want to change their name, why they want to control the media cycle a little. But with that in mind, my favorite quote from the lengthy video was the Zuck saying, "Our strategy and track record show that we will do everything we believe is sustainable to grow the community, the creator economy, and the developer ecosystem." So what do you guys think of Facebook's track record?
It's like when the Last Jedi, it's like in the Last Jedi when he said, amazing, every word you say in that sentence is wrong.
if you want to talk track record, it's like the Last Jedi, a complete misdirection.
No. It's just like, no. If anybody had the choice, if this was a democratic process, nobody. But I just like single-digit percentages would actually entrust Facebook with this power. But unfortunately, that's not the world we're living in. The world we're living in is when the behemoth moves, everything moves with them. And this applies to Google, this applies to AWS, this definitely applies to Facebook. So, and I have a theory why this has captured imaginations and why the executives are willing to bet money on it. So essentially, it's the idea that sci-fi describes our fucking future. And like, we've been following this pattern for years, you know, like first we imagine it and then we build it. We imagine it and then we build it. It might be a part of human nature. We can't imagine it. It does not become like a mainstream idea. We can't build it. And these ideas about the metaverse actually originate with the very first of cyberpunk, with William Gibson's Neuromancer trilogy. And over there, they had these virtual environments and everybody was free to create their own. So if you meet somebody in virtual, you know, like it could be like a completely insane thing going around you. People can represent themselves as any avatar, force of nature, you know, like whatever, any construct they imagine. And it's all just, you know, like we can build that already. It all kind of makes sense. So I think what is important about the meta is investors, shareholders, everybody else buying into this along with Zuck. Everybody buying into the singular version of the future, which involves these layers on reality and which involves these completely separate virtual spaces that we will be able to create and mold. And these ideas are not new. They've existed for at least 30 years, probably longer than that. And we are just implementing them now. So why is this happening? It's because William Gibson said so and a generation of sci-fi writers envisioned it.
But isn't it what Seb just said, though? Like, that the investors will buy it because it's just something new that hasn't happened yet.
No, right? No,
somewhere you can sink your money.
It is not new.
No, okay, but I'm saying like in terms of technology and adoption.
The internal data that got leaked show that young people are not signing up to Facebook. They have a youth problem.
And they hasn't done it for years.
Well, and your nan's on it.
Yeah, and it's a natural thing.
Simon
for,
is on
for
it
a
too.
Company such as yourself, which only works if a bunch of people are part of it, to worry what if a bunch of people stop using us. And you know, most young people have shifted over to TikTok. This is something new that they can dangle in front of investors. This is something new they can talk about when a journalist says, oh, what about that genocide? This is something.
It's a change of topic.
Yeah, it's a change. It's a new name.
Conversation.
It's Facebook employees, when they're at a bar and someone asks, where do you work? They don't have to say, oh, the company that ruined a democracy. We work at Meta. Oh, you haven't heard of it. It's the cool.
It's the company that ruined the reality.
Yeah.
Thanks, Zuck.
So to summarize, they plan to spend $10 billion at least on Facebook Reality Labs, which is a terrifying name because they should not be anywhere near reality. They already have a VR subsidiary. They're pumping more money into that. There's a new high-end headset that will be announced soon. They have their version.
Is Jim Romero still there?
Yeah, well, I mean, it was John Carmack.
Ah.
So, yeah. John Carmack is still advising, but it's kind of, he's doing his own things. I think fundamentally my issue is that the history of intermediary systems has been minimal baggage. So Google search works because it's stripped back. I want to get to a website. The better it is at getting me there quickly, the better Google is. Operating system is better as I want to open Word, it's quick. I want to open Microsoft Teams to shout at Max, it's quick. The whole concept of creating a waiting room experience and is fundamentally stupid.
Everybody in gaming has done it and failed.
Yeah, and then
everybody.
So if you just joined the podcast now, Seb hates waiting VR waiting room. That's what he's getting for the last half an hour.
Seb really hates VR.
We know. We got
The idea is stupid. The company behind it cannot be trusted fundamentally. And 100%. The vision is a cynical way of distracting audiences and investors from a deepening crisis, which they haven't truly been punished for. And maybe they will one day in a Hague-like scenario.
Oh, gosh, Seb.
Speaking from the horrific reality we can't escape, we're now talking about data centers, climate change, and more. So basically, earlier this week, for AI Business, I covered something from a company called Neuro, who claimed to have created a zero emissions AI cloud in their data center in a partnership with a company called AtNorth in Iceland, in the Nordics. Now, when I covered this, great, fantastic. I think that other companies should be doing it because big tech is now producing sort of emissions levels similar to fucking pre-COVID air travel.
But what do you have to curse?
I don't know, because I've had a bit
what? It's not, is it something you hate? Shush. What do you mean pre-COVID air travel? You don't have to add the head and half word to it.
So, when I covered this, I thought, great, that's fantastic. I am a little bit sceptic, however. It said zero emissions, which means emissions are still being produced. So I didn't quite understand it. But we have two hardcore data center nerds with us from opposing factions. And I'm hoping they'll teach me about this and in turn teach you listeners as well. So who wants to kick things off and enlighten me?
So AI is obviously facing a lot of problems with ethics and accountability and transparency. But one of the biggest problems is it's just
that's
like
a
the
lot
cost
of stuff.
No. The energy consumption infrastructure. So basically, AI is a radically different workload. It just needs more power than your traditional databases or stuff like that. You know, like it's huge banks of GPUs. They consume loads, you know, like rack density is increasing, but it's just like it's increasing very, very slowly for general workloads. But for AI, you know, like we're talking about like 30-40 kilowatts per rack. It's a lot. It's a lot of power for just like this one kind of stack of IT hardware. And the idea is, where do you get this electricity? Now, if you set it somewhere where people are to consume services, oh, well, it's great for latency and other things, you know, like you get lots of benefits. Some industries straight up need that, like, for example, finance. But you're going to pay crazy amounts of money for your electricity. Your electricity is going to come from fossil fuel sources, and you will contribute to the eventual death of this planet. And it's just like, this is where we're going. But imagine a situation. Imagine a location where power is almost free, where they make so much extra power, they're literally, like they're swimming in it. But the idea is, if you try to sell this power and you transport it somewhere else, you're gonna lose a lot of it in transmission losses. So it does not make sense. You need a use case that uses this free power in the place where it's made. And this brings us to the north of Norway.
Which to also add like a footnote, that's how we lost most of power for anybody. Like, you know, when in transferred power, that's how it's a problem we haven't really been fully to tackle yet. It happens on all aspects of power efficiency and
absolutely
transfer of electricity. And but now to Norway.
There are places in the world where power is very easily available and almost free. North of Norway is included because they have very big, very broad, very powerful rivers there, and they have dams. And those dams make so much electricity, it is literally the country cannot spend it. Sending it somewhere else is difficult, and you lose a lot, and it's, you know, like, and using it locally, it just does not make sense. There's not enough industry. In a nutshell, Luleå, where Facebook builds its data centers and a bunch of people too, is one such location. They have a giant dam making, you know, like untold gigawatts of power, and cryptocurrency enthusiasts were some of the first to discover this location, and they built lots of data centers there to mine crypto because power is plentiful. And actually, another point that concerns data center builders very much is cooling. So the lower your temperature outside, the less you have to spend power you have to spend on cooling, and the more you can kind of just like let the outside air do its job. It's beautiful. So crypto guys were first. Eventually, crypto mining became less lucrative, and a lot of the companies that used to do crypto mining, they started looking around and thinking, what else can we do? Oh, what about actual normal IT workloads? We're gonna legitimize like mob bosses in the olden days. We're gonna open a business, and we're gonna wash our money, and it's
become
all gonna
the
be legit. Yes.
Yeah, that's right.
A lot of people have become banks now, and it's just like one example is NordDC. They're data centers in the north of Norway, using this almost free power, using this almost free cooling, and now inviting people in. So yeah, a company called Neuro has built this AI cloud using, you know, like it's their hardware infrastructure and software. It's somebody else's facility, in this case NordDC. NordDC is funny because they named their data centers after mythical Nordic heroes. So there's like and various terms. So there's like there's a Thor data center, there's a Mjolnir data center, there's a bunch of others. Dude, your data center is called Thor, and it's in Norway. I mean, come on.
I'm good.
I know what that is.
In a nutshell,
please. TLDR.
If you think carbon neutral cloud sounds far fetched, you need to travel to the Nordics because this is how they build it. They literally have too much electricity to spend, and they have too much cooling. The only problem is nobody lives there.
And well, also, right. In Norway, pints are £9, and I can't afford that as someone who only drinks
right,
one
nobody
anyway.
Can.
Yeah. So, Seb, and we've talked Norway. So,
the big picture.
Vast picture is that there are these specific locations around the world, such as Norway, such as Iceland, where it does make sense to set up data centers and take advantage of abundant renewable energy. However, because of latency, it doesn't make sense for every single application. The vast majority of workloads, increasingly, especially if we're talking metaverse, very low latency. You can't have the metaverse running through Norway, but you can have your AI training. You can't have AI inference because that's, again, lower latency, but AI training, it makes sense to find these locations that are much lower power. However, there is no such thing as carbon neutral anything, because if you want to create some servers, that requires a hell of a lot of actual physical mining. And actual physical construction of semiconductors, which produce a bunch of very specific chemicals that have thousands of times the greenhouse gas emission potential of carbon dioxide. And then you ship them there and you put them up and you run all this stuff. So there's a huge amount of infrastructure and embedded carbon that these companies don't like to talk about, especially with crypto, when you're basically running meaningless workloads. And supporting a wider cryptocurrency network that relies on a lot of coal power plants across the world. Then we talk about network interconnection to get that data back and forth to the user, because we do not have a 24/7 fossil-free grid around the world, obviously. That connection back and forth releases yet another airline industry's worth of carbon emissions. So this is better than nothing. It's better than PPAs or kind of greenwashing type initiatives where you just kind of plump some money somewhere and hope that it doesn't hurt you. But it's still not where we need to be to avoid the inevitable apocalypse that we are lurching towards every day.
So my question, because I was skeptical about this initially, is because it was zero emission. Do you see this being carbon zero anytime soon? Is that a possibility?
Well, this is the other issue that we need to start thinking about with, you know, the crypto has sold itself a lot as we take advantage of stranded energy, which is what Max is talking about, which is there are these locations where they're creating too much energy. Why don't we, instead of wasting it, might as well use it to run calculations to create a made up coin. And sometimes that means resurrecting coal power plants in America. Sometimes it means building things next to nuclear power plants in Ukraine. The problem is there is a... much better thing we could be doing with these, which is using it to generate hydrogen and then shipping the hydrogen around the world to places that currently have fossil fuel infrastructure.
I like that. Yeah. So you didn't answer Ben's question, but I think you offer a more interesting solution to what we're talking about.
See, I thought carbon neutral steel was good, but this is actually better. Yeah.
I thought nuclear energy was good. Okay. Max, any last words?
Well, no, but I think don't be a giant party pooper, Seb. I mean, still, if
that's who he is. That's
if that
title.
Choice
that's
is available
title.
To you,
editor,
let's just say,
giant party pooper.
Yeah.
No. If you have a choice of where to place your AI training workloads, please consider these places. Please consider Iceland, Norway, Sweden, because it is cheap. It makes financial sense.
So why aren't
sense.
People doing
they
that
are,
already? Why aren't people all jump
because
over
it's
already?
New? Because it's just beginning. Okay. Like, seriously, we just had I think last year we had
Tech Cantrell ahead of his time
on the podcast and
sure.
Vern, and they were pioneering this idea that seriously, come to Iceland. It's not fit for every workload, but we're building AI infrastructure for AI.
And the food is not great. Coffee is $5.
Yeah. And my final thought, I will just say that as a Russian, Max listed Iceland, Sweden, Norway. He forgot to mention Finland. No surprises there. Typical Russian.
Finland is pretty much Russia the way I see it. I mean.
And on that note, Tien, where can we find you?
I love it how you're. This is your.
Tien,
this is your punk star.
This is my show now.
So that's a lot of stuff, you know. We just mentioned, and there's I think Seb might have tied the world record of squeezing the most information in a 2-minute segment.
Run.
If you wonder where was the segment, it's because I cut it out.
Right.
No, I'm just kidding. I mean, it's going to be in there. I'm just saying that. Let's talk about where people can find us outside of the metaverse. You can find me in the Jersey City local bar. Although I'm meeting a friend for a drink later today, so you'll find me in Lower Manhattan having a $7 beer with a friend. Actually, I'm gonna do a cocktail.
Okay, this is kind of weird, man.
And also, you can find me. Max, I'm not impressed. You can also find me at inside the metaverse at on the Instagram, I guess, at Tianchifu, TIENCHI, and Twitter at also Tianchifu. And where can people find you, Max?
Well, for three more weeks at AIbusiness.com, also on Twitter at MaxSmallAx, and in 3 weeks you're gonna find me at Data Center Knowledge, you know, laying some knowledge about data centers.
And in 5 years in an old folks' home in Zone 5 of London.
If it's not a mental institution.
Now that we're talking
yes.
about future, since you're giving us future, where you're gonna be in the future.
I am not in the metaverse. Everything and is virtual.
Right. And for now, where can people find you, Seb?
You can find me writing on the largest and best data center publication with the largest number of writers, a wonderful team
DCK?
Of journalists.
DCD. Data Center Knowledge.
It has the most news, the deepest features. It's got a magazine.
And Benjamin, gluting on the chair, where can people find you?
You can always find me, unlike some people, on AIbusiness.com. I'm not going anywhere. You can also find me on Twitter, at Ben Wadecki. I'm going to be tweeting a lot this weekend about Age of Empires 4. 16 years
ago. Oh,
making.
I'm excited about that. Oh, yeah. It's going to be like flying objects, eagles, or whatever in there.
Yeah,
like
I've played
Air
it.
Force? Are we looking at air battle?
So far, the Chinese army have really impressed me. So yeah, all enjoying it.
The real one, or the are we talking about the real one or the
no comment.